publiccharters.org.
Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter. At 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. Domestic violence behind closed doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. This conversation is also streaming live on WHUR's YouTube page, and so we invite you to join us. It is no secret that on any given day and at any hour, a woman, a man, or a child are suffering behind closed doors, stuck in a vicious cycle of domestic violence. It is a dirty little secret that many people know about but dare not speak about. Well, tonight, we're opening the doors and breaking the silence of domestic violence. And tonight, we begin with Sylvia Pauling. She is a licensed professional counselor and founder of the Pauling Institute. Also, Denise McCain, director of the Family Justice Center of Prince George's County. And Paula Mason, domestic violence survivor. We are taking calls tonight, 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Ladies, thank you so much for joining me. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I want to first start with you, Denise. Domestic violence typically is, as we say, a behind the closed door situation. What makes it such a difficult issue to tackle?
Well, you know, Harold, I think really it's largely about the fact that it's the nature of domestic violence. I think when people typically think about the issue, they associate domestic abuse with physical violence. But the reality of it is that it manifests itself in many other ways, such as emotional abuse, psychological abuse, financial, sexual abuse. So those are things that you don't necessarily see. And that's really one of the reasons why it's very difficult to tackle it. Further, when we think about a person who's being belittled, who's being made to feel less than, who's being hurt emotionally, those are not chargeable offenses. You know, you can't go to a courtroom and say that this is what my partner said to me or makes me feel, or I feel intimidated or threatened. I don't feel good about myself. There are no remedies for that. I think the other issue that makes this so difficult is that victims themselves sometimes they feel trapped, but they're also very much in a state where they perhaps are in denial or they take responsibility for it. We see this. It's a cycle. They're in the relationships. They leave. They come back. So, you know, if someone looking at this again from the outside may say, well, you know, if this is going on, why don't you just leave?
Sylvia, you counsel survivors.
Yes.
But this is a very personal situation for you because you lost a sister.
Yes.
Talk to me about that and how that has impacted your life and your work.
So I lost my sister after doing this work for some time. It was very impactful for me because, again, it showed that the signs are not always apparent. My sister and I were like best friends. She had only known this guy for 6 months, but there were no signs. We saw no signs. We saw a typical guy who would come over and socialize. And my last experience with him was attending a movie with our family on Thanksgiving. So for me, the impact was that it's not always apparent. And I think one of the things is to understand what a healthy relationship looks like.
Did you know what was happening?
No, I didn't. He gave no signs. He was a very, very charming. He was charming. My sister says he was moving too fast because she met him in March. Mm-hmm. And by the time I met him, it was like November, December. The one thing she did say was that she didn't want to be in a serious relationship. And so once he murdered her, some of the things he said while in jail was that he didn't want anyone else to have her, mm-hmm. Or anyone else to be with her.
I think that makes a lot of sense. Paula, earlier when Denise and Sylvia were speaking, you were kind of nodding your head. Yeah. You are a domestic violence survivor, and tell me your story.
Well, as with Sylvia, the relationship went really fast, and pretty much he started to dominate and control from the beginning. And you're not aware because, well, for me, I wasn't aware because I wanted the relationship. And I felt that it was love that was coming towards me, but it all stemmed and targeted towards isolation from your family, your friends, control, verbal abuse, and then physical abuse. I went through it all. And unfortunately, before Sylvia's sister, I didn't lose my life, but I had to fight for my life every day, for my emotional stability, for my physical strength.
Was it violent?
It was violent. It was in stages for me. It wasn't immediately the physical at first. He had to get control because they have to establish their footing to make sure they're in, you know, they have you where they want you so they can manipulate you the way that they want you to. He had control of the way I dressed, what time I go to work. He took me to work. He took me wherever I needed to go. I couldn't drive my own car. So it was all of that. And then, like I was telling the young ladies earlier, I remember the last fight. And for the last year, if anybody's listening, for the last year, I kept a journal so I could see the stages of what was going on in my life. And I had to make some changes. I had to break away.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You're listening to a special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR and SiriusXM, Domestic Violence Behind Closed Doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and, of course, WHUR. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you need help as it relates to a domestic violence situation, whether it is physical, emotional, financial, sexual, or otherwise, you're certainly invited to give us a call again at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Also, this conversation is streaming live on WHUR's YouTube page. Denise, one of the things, and certainly Sylvia, if there's something that you want to add to this, you're certainly welcome to jump in. But, you know, one of the things that we often see when it comes to domestic violence or anything untoward that is going on behind closed doors in somebody's household is you don't know what's going on. It could be a financial problem. You could have a sick child. You could have anything. And if it is a domestic violence situation, you don't know about that either. What is that, the thing that makes it so difficult?
Well, it is in part. And I think what we have to also understand, you know, just as both these ladies stated, you know, this is not the thing that people, first of all, they're not aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. You know, you pointed out that your sister, the relationship was moving very fast. He appeared to be very charming. You know, in your case, you wanted the relationship. You thought he was probably the knight in shining armor, mm-hmm. doing all these things. People oftentimes mistake those as signs of love.
Correct.
The fact that they're really trying to control and
Correct.
Isolate you. So, again, it's challenging because it never looks like what it is, even on the surface, so let alone behind closed doors. Women are emotionally trapped, they're manipulated, they're controlled, they're confused. And these are the tactics, these are the manipulative tools that abusers use, just as you said,
Absolutely.
To get you in their grips. And once they have you,
Absolutely.
Then you start seeing the other side. We call it the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde.
Mm-hmm.
The person that you meet is really not mm-hmm. the person that you end up with.
Yeah, he was the fun-loving center of attention when we were in public, but at home, it was something else.
And the challenge with that is, of course, is, you know, what people see in public, it makes it difficult for them to believe
what's
that
really
this
going on.
Person is really doing
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
And that's all very much a part of the plan.
Sylvia.
And I think one of the things that happens is the abuser, the behavior, the target is the victim, or the target is the survivor. So we don't publicly see any of that. That's the common denominator. So most of these people are not aggressive with you and I. They're aggressive with that person that they're in that intimate relationship with. And that's what makes it really hard, because oftentimes someone may see someone at work and think, oh, this is a really neat guy. You know, he does everything polite and all of that. But at home, behind closed doors, he's actually a villain. Because domestic violence, the emphasis is that intimate relationship. And that's what makes it so extremely hard for others to kind of understand the behavior.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is a special edition of the Daily Drum on WHUR. And Sirius XM, Channel 141, Domestic Violence Behind Closed Doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated, and of course WHUR. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. Tony, calling from Silver Spring. Tony, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
What is on my mind is that I'm a man. I knew my wife for 15 years before we got married. And then when we had our first child, I realized that she sometimes get angry. She punches me. She used derogatory words to describe me. Of course, I'm a foreigner with an accent, so she sometimes tells me, oh, you need to wash your hand before you pick up our baby. All sorts of things was going on. And the worst is that she has tried to use the court system to get me imprisoned by filing bogus charges.
Well, Tony, let me stop you there, because I do want our panel to talk about that. And we are also going to later address the domestic violence issue as it relates to men also, not just men as the perpetrators of domestic violence, but also those who are on the receiving end of that. So, Denise, talk to me a little bit about that, because it sounds to me, although he didn't mention any physical violence, he did sound as if he were talking about a controlling situation. What is the difference between, for example, him being told by his wife, you know, wash your hands and take care of the baby, blah, 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 controlling and caring? What's the difference?
Well, the reality of it is that, you know, there is no difference with regard to domestic violence, whether perpetrators are men or women. Statistically, 1 in 7 men will be a victim of domestic abuse. More often than not, it is emotional, psychological, just by virtue of the fact that men tend to be larger, and men are also taught not to hit women. So most cases, women have been more verbally abuses, but it does happen to men.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about that, Sylvia, the difference between caring and controlling, how do you know?
So I think one of the things that's important in a healthy relationship is boundaries. And so we all have a right to boundaries. And so when those boundaries are being crossed, whether that's in the form of a verbal abuse, or whether you don't want to wash your hands, or she's intimidating you because you have to do whatever she says in order to hold your baby. Mm-hmm. So that in itself is a form of psychological or mental abuse. Mm-hmm. But I do think we all have the right to establish healthy boundaries within relationships.
Yeah. Yeah. And before I go to a break, a final word from you, Paul, and I do like to say, I'm glad that you're a survivor, but also thriving.
Yes.
So your final thoughts about your situation.
Well, and I want to go back just really quick. My mom suffered for 25 years with domestic violence, and I witnessed it all the time. She left with scars, physical scars. She was stabbed. She was beaten every Saturday. I can say every Saturday around 5 p.m. That's how vivid it was. But also to Tony, he did mention that he was being punched. So this is a form of domestic violence, Tony. So please seek help. But I got out, and I'm living my best life. Yeah. And I want to say to anyone that's listening, you can get out. There is help. There is a hotline. There are organizations. If you need to reach me, leave your number here and I will get in contact and talk with you.
Thank you so much, Paula. And after the break, we will be sharing some of those resources with you. We're going to take a real quick break. We're going to talk to Juella from Waldorf, Amina calling from D.C., Belinda calling from Maryland. Lines are still open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is a special edition of The Daily Drum, Domestic Violence Behind Closed Doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and WHUR. We'll be back in just a few seconds. To the Daily Drum. This is a special edition on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141, Domestic Violence Behind Closed Doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. We want to remind you this conversation is also streaming live on WHUR's YouTube page. We are continuing with Sylvia Pauling, licensed professional counselor and founder of the Pauling Institute Incorporated, Denise McCain, director of the Family Justice Center of Prince George's County. And joining me right now, Mandrell Burks, certified domestic abuse intervention trainer. Mandrell, thank you so much for joining me. Before we come to you, I want to go back to the phone lines at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Pam calling from Waldorf, Maryland. Thanks for calling, Pam. What's on your mind?
Hi. I just want to say thank you for taking my call, and thank you to the panel for talking about this sensitive topic. I have a family member very concerned about being abused and by her boyfriend, and I had thoughts of maybe confronting the boyfriend about it, making him aware that the family knows and, we're asking him to stop. What do you guys think about that?
Mandrell, let me start with you. Everyone here is obviously shaking their head no, but your thoughts about her confronting her family member's boyfriend.
Oh, thank you. Caller, thank you for having the courage to call in. First and foremost, do not try to intervene. Call for help. If you're in Maryland, contact the Family Justice Center. You want to make yourself aware of all of the information that is out there so that you can get a full understanding of what to do. The friend that reached out to you may feel confident that you are the one that she needs to speak to. And so you don't want to disrupt that line of communication. You want to make sure that you are aware of all of the resources. Get yourself prepared. Educate yourself on the subject. Reach out to the Family Justice Center. They have several resources there so that they could create a level of calculated steps that you can take so that you can walk down this road in a safe way. Safety is always first.
How can she reach out, before we make one other comment, how can she get to those resources for her family member?
Sure. Well, let me just tell you, the Family Justice Center, it is the one-stop shop. 24 agencies are all co-located there. The phone number is 301-780-8008. So please call. But I would also add that you could potentially be putting your friend in greater danger by confronting her abuser. First and foremost, by letting it be known that you are aware of the abuse or potential of abuse, which would suggest that she may have confided in you, which would then lead to further harm for her. So I would certainly not encourage you, not to mention the fact that you could also potentially be victimized yourself. Mm-hmm. So please don't do that.
Your suggestion, Sylvia, about what her family member can do while she is in this situation, since it is, at least as far as Pam is concerned, it is known.
Right. And if she's confided in you, I would suggest that you help her develop a safety plan. That's probably one of the biggest things that can be helpful. This person knows the abuser better than anyone, so you do not want to put her in more danger or yourself. And you have to understand that the level of abuse, you may not even know what the level is. So being able to help her develop a safety plan or as it was said before, learning the resources, all of that is a part of developing an actual safety plan that she may decide to use one day.
Mandro, quickly, and Pam, thank you so much for sharing with us. And we promise that there will be other resources on our website on WHUR.com after 9 o'clock tonight. Briefly, because I've got to go to a break in just a bit, Mandro. But talk to me about what's going on in the head of an abuser.
Well, you know, they say a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. There are several things that could be going on as far as in it. If they are the controller in their relationship, they don't want the victim to reach out to their family. They may remove the victim from the home and move them towards a different state. They want complete control. And when they feel like someone's reaching out, or that victim feels like she's able to step up or speak out for herself, then the verbal abuse can become more aggressive. It can get more physical. So if they feel like they're losing control because a victim is gaining some esteem, then some issues can occur, and oftentimes it can really go to death.
Stay with us. We will continue this special edition of the Daily Drum, Domestic Violence Behind Closed Doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and WHUR. This conversation will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. Lines will remain open if you have a question, if you have a comment, if you need some assistance. Amina from D.C., we're going to talk to you. Belinda from Maryland, we're also going to talk to you. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Jeff Brown is next on 96.3 WHUR with the original Quiet Storm. This conversation will continue also on live stream on WHUR's YouTube page. We'll be back in just a few seconds.
.org to learn more.
Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. Domestic Violence Behind Closed Doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. This conversation is also streaming live on WHUR's YouTube page. Now, tonight we continue with Denise McCain, Director of the Family Justice Center of Prince George's County, Mandrell Burke, Certified Domestic Abuse Intervention Trainer, and joining us now, Lisa Counsell. She is a domestic violence advocate and survivor. Lisa, thank you so much for joining this conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Harold.
Before I go to you, I want to go back to the phone lines. Lines are still open, of course, if you have questions, if you have comments, if you need help, if you know someone who needs help, this is the opportunity for you to get that much needed help at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Please keep your comments brief. We have a lot of people on the line, and we want to try to help as many people as we can. Belinda, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind? Belinda, are you there?
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing just fine. Turn down your radio. Go right ahead, please.
Okay. I was just calling because I had experienced where the abuser kept me in the house. I finally got away, and we met in 2009. 14. I was to attend a ceremony type graduation thing, and he had just basically beat me prior to me receiving this certificate. I got away, and I still went to the ceremony. when I got there, everybody was like, what happened to you? Why are you all scratched up? You know, why are you crying, or what happened? But I felt I still need to go. I worked hard. It was time for me to move on. Come September 2014, I never looked back. I never went back to that house. I have had no contact with him. He has tried to reach out to me to say, oh, I need closure, this, that, and the other. I would not respond because I believe God was there at that time to have me move on.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
not continue with this relationship.
How are you? Like, let me ask you, Belinda, because as I said, we've got a lot of folks on the line, and I want to make sure that we are able to reach out to as many people as possible. How are you now, briefly? How are you now?
It is wonderful. It is beautiful. I have had so many blessings. I have been able to get my CDL, you know, my commercial driver's license. I have, become self-sufficient, mm-hmm. Not depending on that person. It's peaceful. My son isn't experiencing, you know, the negative that wasn't something he should have even seen either, you know. But, yes, I'm very happy right now, and I just hope that women out here that are having these problems with these abusers, vice versa, it's not always the women,
right.
That they can, you know, at some point understand and leave, you know, get away.
Well, Belinda, I thank you so much for sharing, and all of us here, and I'm sure everyone listening is very, very happy to know that you are not just a survivor, but a thriver, and that you were able to remove yourself from this situation. So thank you so much for sharing with us. Which brings me to Lisa. When you hear stories like Belinda's story, where she was in it and she got out of it. You were in it.
I was in it.
And you got out of it.
I did.
Talk to me
out
about
of it.
That.
I was a victim for 33 plus years. I initially at 13, I experienced rape, and as a result, I became pregnant. And the cycle just continued for me from that point forward until I was in my mid-40s. Along with me being a victim, my only sister was also a victim, and she was brutally murdered by her husband. After she had got to a point where she was tired and she took her power back, and her husband in turn came home, lured her into their storage bin. He brutally raped her. He crushed her skull completely. He stabbed her 32 times in the upper torso, and he shot her in the head at close range 4 times. So it's important for victims to know that you must have a safety plan. For me, I did not have a safety plan in place. I just ran on my own. However, that can be very dangerous, because with victims and day-to-day people do not understand that when victims come out of these relationships, and if they don't have a safety plan set in place, the chances of you losing your life escalates to 75%. And if there are firearms within the home, it increases by 2,000%. So it's very important, like we said earlier, that a safety plan must be set into place before you even think about leaving your abuser.
You know, I want Denise and Mandrell to talk about this. But Mandrell, I'll start with you, because based on, at first blush, based on what Lisa was just describing to us, this is obviously a criminal act. I would imagine that some abusers that are not, they may not even necessarily be violent, but they're just controlling. These aren't criminals, mind you. These are people that need help. Mm-hmm. But what you just described is not just someone who needed help. Talk to me a little bit about that. That was criminal.
See, and that's where I struggle with this all the time, because we concentrate so much on victim services. And we always state during the month of October we need to break this cycle of physical abuse. And it has become apparent to me that we really need to step up with regards to providing help for men as well. We need to provide a little bit more. We need to do a whole lot more. A large percentage of these resources they basically help victims who are struggling. I'm not saying that it's wrong to support those organizations. I'm saying we need to increase or provide more support for men, those individuals who just did something horrific. That case with her sister, that did so much trauma, but yet there's so less resources to help them out.
But what does that help? What does that help look like? Because I would imagine that because this
for men,
for men,
yeah.
Of the abuser, let's say not just the men, although you, certainly the lion's share of abusers are men, right. But for abusers as a whole, I would imagine that they're not crying for help.
Mm-mm.
They're not seeking help.
No. You're right. And the overwhelming majority of abusers, and when we talk about these programs, to your point, what do we do? What are services? What do they look like? There are abuser intervention programs, but the reality of it is that most abusers who go have been court ordered.
Right.
So first and foremost, they don't want to be there. They don't believe that they've done anything wrong, and they're only there to stay out of jail. So it's not going to work. There's
right.
no level of accountability as it pertains to getting that help. However, I do agree, and I think that we have to start looking at the root of the problem if we are ever going to see any real change, if we're going to eradicate domestic violence. There, it's critical that we provide those services and resources for victims.
Right.
But yes, we should also take a look at what's going on with men.
What is the root?
They're not doing any. They're not doing anything as much. And she was perfectly correct. She was right, totally correct. But you know, we can't break this cycle of physical abuse without providing more resources for men. And it sounds a little bit, you know, disturbing, like you're pushing away from a conversation, but we can't balance that out. It's almost like we're breaking the branch, but we're not attacking the root. And the root is we have to find a way to reach men. Like we had a man that called in and he was saying, look, I needed help. Now, he wasn't court ordered, but he called into a radio show. And if you go to a victim support group, they'll look at you and say, no, I'm just a man that's on, you know, that's looking for support. And they'll look at, oh, well, that's not a part of our program.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well,
that's not so a part of what we have.
So
we don't serve.
Yeah, when we talk about looking at the root of the problem, we have to take it back to the household, because in fact a lot of abusers come from abusive households,
right.
And abuse is a learned behavior,
right.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I was about to say that because this is like that scene in The Color Purple. You told Harpo to beat me,
exactly.
So someone told the spouse to do this. So is it always learned?
For the most part, it is mm-hmm. learned behavior. It is environmental to some extent. I think it's perpetuated by what children are watching with regard to what's going on in their communities, the violence. But the root of it is in the household. When children learn that this is the way you deal with conflict, that this is mm-hmm. the way I get what I want, this is the way to show that I'm dominant, that I'm the person that has the power. I also wanted to add, when you were talking about this whole issue of root beyond that, there have been studies that have shown that there's this ACEs study, Adverse Childhood Experiences. They have looked at abusers, and those who have had very high ACE scores are more likely to be perpetrators. And though there are some indicators in there, have you witnessed abuse? Have your parents been divorced?
Mm-hmm.
Have you lived in a community where there were violence? The higher a person scores on these ACE scores, there's a greater probability that they will become abusive and or even victims. So there's been a lot more study and research around why is it that some people are more inclined to do this as opposed to others, even if they come from environments or homes that have had domestic abuse. It's not 100% guaranteed that if you witness it and you live in a home that you're going to become a perpetrator or a victim. There's a greater probability. Why is it that some are and some aren't? So there are other factors that should also be looked at when we're trying to understand this at a deeper level.
Let me go back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Belinda calling from Virginia. Thanks for hanging on. What's on your mind? Belinda, are you there?
Hi, I'm here.
Go right ahead, please.
I'm calling because I just feel like a lot of times they say you should not say anything and you should not tell if there is abuse going on within a friendship. But I disagree with that. Because
within a friendship? When you say within a friendship.
You never know what has gone on within that female. Like my daughter, she was killed just recently in December in Largo, Florida. Mm-hmm. Her boyfriend ran over her head only, putting the baby in the backseat of a car.
Mm-hmm.
So if no one told that this person was abusing her, which I don't understand why she, my daughter alone, didn't even mention anything, but she stayed within it. But her friends knew about it. So I still think that you never know what other people, what has gone on in the young lady's family. So, like, I was abused when I was with her father. So she knew we left her father age 3 for her. So she knew not to be in a relationship like that. So had her friends told me that she was in an abusive relationship, I think it would have helped.
Yeah.
And it is a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde situation, because that young man that ran over my daughter's head, only the police allowed him to get in his car and leave the scene,
mm-hmm,
and go home. And they said it was an accident.
Mm-hmm. Belinda, thank you so much for sharing your story. And again, as I have said throughout, I'm glad that you are not only a survivor, but a thriver. And certainly, you know, our condolences on the loss of your daughter. We need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Amina calling from D.C. We are continuing our special edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. Domestic violence behind closed doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and WHUR. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to this special edition of the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. Domestic violence behind closed doors, brought to you in part by the Restoration Center Incorporated and WHUR. I'm Harold Fisher. We are continuing with Denise McCain with the Family Justice Center of Prince George's County, Mandrell Burks, a certified domestic abuse intervention trainer, and rejoining us, Sylvia Pauling, a licensed professional counselor and founder of the Pauling Institute. Before I go back to the phone lines, Denise, you wanted to share something. Yeah.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify. The last caller stated that she didn't agree with the statement about not approaching or telling someone. We want to be clear. We certainly would encourage a victim to speak out and to let someone know that he or she is being victimized. The statement was about not approaching a perpetrator.
Absolutely.
And so I just wanted to be clear that we would certainly encourage and would never tell someone to not speak out about their abuse.
And I think to the point that one of the other callers, you know, was making about getting out, removing yourself. And I'm not even talking about just physically removing yourself, but preparing yourself in your head to get away. And Sylvia, I'm glad you're here, because when you are counseling, what do you say to the people that you're counseling about how they should be thinking in order to emotionally extract themselves?
Well, one of the things is first to meet people where they are. And so helping them to process the mental abuse, the psychological abuse, but also to understand that, yes, they're afraid, they're scared, and they don't know what to do. So helping them to tap within to figure out they have the power, but they don't often understand or see that. And so it's a combination of things. It's not just therapy. It's a combination. It could be spiritual resources. It could be reaching out to other people. But once their mind gets to a place where they can start trying to tap into other resources, understand that this behavior is not normal behavior, because oftentimes they believe that this is normal behavior, and they see some of those patterns as love. They don't understand that when someone is calling you consecutively or constantly following you, that that's not necessarily love. So when they begin to realize what a healthy relationship looks like, that they don't deserve to be treated the way that they're being treated, then they become empowered. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all, but it's a combination of things because the pain is deep rooted.
Mm-hmm. I just mm-hmm. like to add to that, and I do agree that certainly you have to meet them where they are. You have to realize that for everyone it's different. The reasons why they stay is also going to be very different from the reasons why they leave. It is about building up the self-esteem, the confidence to empower them, but at the same time, you have to also offer them some very practical solutions as to where am I going to go, how am I going to take care of myself, my children, where will I live, because many victims are dependent upon their abusers financially. They cannot sustain themselves without that support. So while I may have it in my head that I'm ready to go, that this is wrong, I get that, but where am I going to go? So you have to offer them and make sure that they understand, have a clear path, a realistic path as to what this is going to look like.
And I think they probably have to elaborate on what empowerment looks like. It's not a one-time thing. It's not a one-time meeting. It's not a once-a-year event. One time we did a poll, and I asked, I said, look, if you were only hit one time, would you stay in a relationship? And that particular poll was given after this huge training, after all of the inspirational stories, after the survivor stories, after all of the clinical professionals come up. And then when the poll came out, would you go back? 32% of the people that were in the crowd say yes. So, you know, they thought they were doing something by putting it on a huge event, but actually, you still, you know, when reality sets in.
Did you discuss why those 32% would stay or go back?
Well, I mean, it was at the end, and so we wanted to get a feel or a pulse of how they were feeling. And when reality sets in, they still have to go back home. You still may advise someone. You still may empower someone. But you still have to communicate with them on an ongoing basis. You still have to continue to reach out. And speaking of reaching out, I keep thinking when I hear these horrific stories, what could we have done to reach those men before they did that? Before they do those crimes, what could we have done? You know, we're prepared to put a Band-Aid on half the scar, all right, half the bruise. The bruise is festering for those young boys who are suffering. How could we have reached those men before they started shooting someone in the head, stabbing someone several times? How did they just get ignored for 20 some odd years?
And I think that goes to the root of this segment in getting help when someone needs it or getting to the deeply buried roots of the problem when you're talking about young people and as they begin to develop relationships and talk about a little bit about what's healthy and what isn't healthy and the resources for finding those things. I want to get to those in just a bit, but I need to talk to Amina. She's been a patient hanging on from D.C. Amina, thanks for calling briefly. What's on your mind?
Yes, good evening. Yes, I just have to give you all praises for this topic, and you all hit some great, terrific points as a domestic violence survivor. And, you know, I also advocate, you know, for women because I went through it and survived and started to learn my worth. You know, I think that's key. Once a woman starts to learn their worth, that they are worthy, you know, that the you know, it's very touching to me, you know, because I have a grown daughter who's struggling with those things. But the thing about it I did do with her is start to create the safety plan. You cannot, you cannot reiterate that anymore. You know, once they learn that you are worthy and you are capable of having an abuse-free life and relationship, you know, the safety plan is definitely key.
Well, thank you so much, Amina, for sharing that with us. And to her point, let's talk a little bit about some of those resources for victims that are still in it, for victims or survivors that are coming out of it, and those that are, perhaps are struggling with the residual impacts of domestic violence. I'll start with you, Sylvia. Talk to me a little bit about resources and where people can go.
And so there are a number of programs. Unfortunately, we don't have enough, but there's programs such as the Family Resource Center, or the Family Justice Center, I'm sorry. And in D.C., there is a program called SAFE that is connected with the courts. There's programs such as Safe Houses, and those, I would agree with Denise, those things are important, because before a victim can get to therapy or before she can get to counseling, if she doesn't know where she's going to live or how she's going to eat, she's not going to be able to even focus in a therapy session. And so, yes, it's very important to meet those basic needs. And oftentimes that means someone may go to their church to have a basic need met. We have to know how to respond to them. So that may mean a church needs to make sure they have a referral source, because they may not have the answer within themselves, mm-hmm. but they need to have these resources that someone can go to receive services.
Mm-hmm. Denise?
Well, I would just add that, of course, there are national programs that you can access through the website, the National Domestic Violence Hotline. But every jurisdiction in the state of Maryland has at least one comprehensive domestic violence program that offers an entire array of services, from counseling to shelter, as well as some legal resources. Of course, the Family Justice Center is a resource for residents of Prince George's County. We are an initiative of the Circuit Court for Prince George's County, and as was stated, we are the comprehensive provider in that we have all of the resources located in that one facility. What we have found is that the overwhelming need has been for housing and legal resources. And we have 6 law firms located there. We have 3 agencies that provide housing. We work with governmental agencies that also provide vouchers for housing. So it is a very efficient, it's a very efficacious way to address it, because we understand that people are traumatized. They don't know where to go. And it can be a very daunting process to try to navigate the system without that level of support. So we've made the process very simple by putting all of those services together under one roof.
Mandrell?
I would say continue to be proactive. Get that conversation going with men. I want to reach these boys before they become these horrific abusers. I need to find a way to be more proactive to reaching out to these organizations, whether it's fraternities, whether it's churches. Take up this torch that women have been running with for over hundreds of years, and it's time for you to step up and do your part. We need to do more than say step up. We need to do more than say men need to do a little bit more, and they need to get more engaged. We need to do something. Get those men together. Bring your ministries together and talk about this issue on a consistent basis, not just during the month of October. Okay, consistently. We're trying to reach these young boys. We're trying to reach these men before they go over that cliff and begin shooting and stabbing and killing people. We have all of these millions of dollars of resources. How about let's try to figure out how to reach those guys before they do these heinous crimes?
Well, I think that's a great way to end this program. And as always, we will be placing resource information, websites, phone numbers, and the like on our website on WHUR.com after this program, should be up around 9 o'clock. I want to thank all of my guests, Denise McCain, Mandrell Burks, Sylvia Pauling, Paula Mason, Lisa Council, and, of course, the Restoration Center Incorporated. That is it for this special edition of the Daily Drum, Domestic Violence Behind Closed Doors on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, October 29th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can tweet us using the hashtag WHURFM. Now stay tuned for The Connection.